"What's your pouch doing here?" Kara asked, as her gaze swept the surrounding countryside. Her ajeel was gripped tightly in her fist. Friedrich stood, still staring at his tool pouch. "It was stolen by the man who I believe caused the death of my wife." Chapter 56. Well, wasn't that just something? Oba could hardly believe that he had dropped his money purse. He was always so careful. He huffed in exasperation. If it wasn't one thing, it was another. Either it was a scheming little cut purse or some thieving woman always after his money. Was that all that the small-minded little people cared about, money? After all his troubles, all the envious, covetous, conniving people trying to get at his hard-earned fortune. Oba had learned the hard way that a man of his standing always had to be careful. He could hardly believe that this time he had done it to himself. He hurriedly checked his pockets, inside his shirt, down in his trousers. All his pouches full of his considerable wealth were there, right where they belonged. He supposed that the one out on the path might not be his, but what were the odds that someone else would drop a purse right there? When he checked the top of his boots, he found that one of his money purses was missing. Fuming, Oba checked the leather thong he always kept tied around his ankle and found it had come untied. Someone had untied his money purse. He peered out through the trees watching the touching scene. His brother Richard and his precious wife turned to the man who had found the purse, Oba's purse, full of his money. "It's mine," Oba heard the man exclaim. "This was stolen when my wife died." Oba's jaw dropped. It was the husband of the swamp witch, the obnoxious, selfish sorceress who wouldn't answer Oba's questions. Oba knew better than to think that this could all be some comical coincidence. He just flat knew better. "Don't touch it," Richard Rawl and the mother confessor yelled at the same time. "Run," the other woman yelled. Oba watched them bolt like frightened deer. He realized that the voice was up to something. He knew that the voice used what belonged to people to reach out to them. Oba looked to each side, to the glowing yellow eyes watching with him, and grinned. The very air shook as if the ground right there where the money purse hit had been struck by lightning. The hounds whined and backed away. Oba plugged each ear with a finger and squinted as he watched the violet concussion spread outward in a circle like the rings in a pond when he threw in a dead animal. In a brutal instant, quicker than thought, the people were flattened as the ring of violet light raced outward faster than his eye could follow. Oba's hair was blown back as the undulating circle swept past him. In its wake, the ground was left covered with a still cottony bed of eerie violet smoke. Oba's suspicions had been proven right. The voice was planning something grand. He wondered with delight what it could be. The scene had gone still, but Oba watched for a long time to be sure the four people wouldn't get up. Only after he was confident that it was safe did he finally rise up from his secret watching place, the place where the voice had told him to wait. The voice urged him on now. The hounds stayed well behind, watching, as Oba hurried across the smoke-covered ground. It was the strangest smoke he had ever seen, a softly glowing bluish violet. But most odd of all, it didn't swirl as Oba ran through it. His legs passed through the still vapor without stirring it at all, as if it were in another world altogether and he wasn't there with it, but just walking in the same place in this world. The four lay sprawled on the ground right where they had fallen. Oba cautiously leaned closer while trying to stay at a safe distance and found them all breathing, if slowly. Their eyes weren't closed. He wondered if they could see him. When he waved his arms, none of the four reacted. Oba bent over Richard Rawl, peering into his still face. He waved a hand low, right before his brother's unblinking eyes. There was no response. It was hard to see in the starlight, but Oba was sure he could make out in those eyes a bit of the fascinating family resemblance. It was a spooky feeling seeing a man who had a trace of similarity in his looks. Oba looked more like his mother, though. That would be just like her to want him to look more like her than his father. The woman was completely self-centered. She had tried to deny him his rightful place at every turn, even in his looks. the selfish bitch. But Richard was the man cheating Oba from his rightful place now, the place their father would have wanted Oba to have. After all, Oba and Darkin Rall shared special qualities that Oba was sure his brother didn't have. A check showed that the old husband of the Swamp Witch was breathing, too. Oba recovered his money purse from nearby and shook it over the man's staring eyes, but he, too, showed no response. Oba tied the purse back around his ankle now that the voice was finished with it. Oba wasn't thrilled about the voice using his money for such tricks. But with all the voice had done for him, making him invincible and all, he guessed he couldn't begrudge a favor now and again. As long as it didn't become a habit. The woman with them had a single long braid laying out across the grassy ground. She wore one of those strange rods on a chain around her wrist. He realized that she was a moored Sith. He squeezed her breasts. She didn't react. He grinned as he lingered at doing it again. With her so willing and all, he considered what else he might do. The idea was startlingly arousing. Oba realized then that there was someone handy who was even better than a moored Sith. He peered over at her. His brother's wife, the woman they called the Mother Confessor, was lying there close by for the taking. What better justice than to have her? Oba crawled over to her, his grin fading with awed reverence when he saw how beautiful she was. She lay on her back, one arm thrown out to the side, her fingers open and slack, as if pointing the way south. Her other arm lay casually across her stomach. Her eyes, too, stared up at nothing. Oba carefully reached out and ran the back of a finger down her cheek. It was as soft as the silken petal of a rose. He pushed a long strand of hair back from her face to better see her features. Her lips were slightly parted. Oba bent over her, putting his lips close to hers, running his hand up her body, feeling her luscious form. His hand glided up the mound of her breast. He fondled it gently in his big hand, just to show her that he could be gentle. He reached over and squeezed her other breast, but still she refused to acknowledge how excited she was by his gentle, tantalizing touch. Quick as a fox, Oba blew in her parted mouth. She didn't react at all. He suspected that she was playing a game with him, teasing him. The haughty bitch. She was going nowhere now. She could not run now. The voice had apparently given him a gift. Oba threw his head back and laughed at the sky. As the hounds far back in the shadows watched, he howled his delight at the stars. Smiling, Oba bent back over Lord Rawl's wife, staring into her eyes. She was probably by now bored with her Lord Rawl husband and was ready for an adventuresome romp. The more Oba thought about it, the more he realized that this woman should be his. She belonged to the Lord Rawl. By all rights, Oba should keep her as his wife when he became the new Lord Rawl. And he would be the Lord Rawl. The voice had told him that such things were within his reach. Oba gazed at the sweep of her features, the curve of her body. He wanted this woman. He'd been doing favors for the voice and hadn't had time to be with a woman for ages. The voice had been prodding him ever onward at a breakneck pace. It was about time Oba had the pleasure of a woman. His hand roamed lightly over the Mother Confessor's body as he contemplated the satisfaction to come. But he didn't like the others watching him. They all refused to close their eyes and give him and the ladies some privacy. Busybodies, all of them. Oba grinned. He supposed it might be a thrill to have her husband watch his wife's new master. The grin faded. What business was it of Richard's if she wanted a new man, a better man? Oba bent over his brother and pushed his eyelids closed. He did the same for the old man. He paused, deciding to let the other woman watch. It would undoubtedly arouse her to see Oba in action. Such arousal was a small favor, but Oba was inclined to do such favors for attractive women. Trembling with anticipation, knowing he could grant her the thrill he knew she craved, Oba bent to rip open the Mother Confessor's clothes. Before his fingers could touch her, a violent flash of violet light threw him back. Oba sat up, stunned, confused, pressing his hands to the nerve-shredding agony shrieking through his head. The voice was crushing his mind with punishing pain. Obah shoved at the ground with his feet, backing away from the mother confessor, and at last the pain eased. He sagged, panting with exhaustion, after the brief bout. He felt downhearted that the voice would punish him so, dejected that the voice would be so cruel as to deny him so simple a pleasure, and after all the good things he had done. The voice changed then, cooing to him, whispering about the important calling it had for him, important works that only Obah was qualified to do. Through his melancholy, Obah listened. Obah was important, or the voice would not rely on him. Who else but Obah could accomplish such things as the voice asked of him? Who else could the voice depend on to set things right? Now, in the silence of the still night, the voice made clear what it was Obah was to do. If he did as he was asked, then there would be rewards. Obah grinned at the pledges. First, he had to do the favor, then the mother confessor would be his. That wasn't so hard. Once she was his, he could do with her whatever he wanted, with the voice's blessing, and no one would interfere. Pictures of it, along with the smells, the feel, the cries of her pleasure, came into his mind, and he nearly fainted with the promise of such rapture. Obah could wait for an encounter such as this would be. He glanced over at the moored Sith. She could provide him some entertainment in the meantime. A man such as he, a man of action, great intellect, and heavy responsibilities, had to have a release of his pent-up tensions. Such diversions were a necessary outlet for a man of Obah's importance. He bent over the moored Sith, grinning into her open eyes. She was to be honored, to be the first to have him. The mother confessor would have to wait her turn. He reached out to pull off her clothes. Obah's head suddenly flared with howling, blinding agony. He pressed his hands to his ears until it stopped, after he agreed. The voice was right. Of course it was. He could see that now. Only when Richard Rawl was dead could Obah take his rightful place. That made sense. It would be best to do things right. In fact, it would be wrong to bring pleasure to these women before he had done what needed doing. What had he been thinking? They didn't deserve him yet. They should first see him as the important man he was shortly to become. And then they would have to beg to have him. They didn't deserve him until they begged. He had to be quick. The voice said they would wake soon, that Lord Rawl would soon figure out how to break the spell of sleep. Obah pulled his knife and crawled to his brother. "Who's the big oaf now?" he asked. Lord Rawl had no answer. Obah put the knife to Richard's throat, but the voice warned him back and filled his mind instead with what he must do. He had to do it right. He had to hurry. There was no time for such common retribution. There were much better ways to do such things, ways that would punish the man for all the years he had kept Obah from his rightful place. Yes, that was what Richard Rawl needed, proper punishment. Obah put his knife away and ran back over the nearby hill as fast as his legs would carry him. When he returned with his horse, the four were still laying there in the blue fog, staring up at the stars. Obah did as the voice asked and scooped up the mother confessor in his arms. She had now been promised to him. He would have her when the voice was done borrowing her. Obah could wait. The voice had promised him delights that Obah would never have dreamed up on his own. This was turning out to be a very beneficial partnership. For the paltry work involved, and the small delay, Obah would have everything that rightfully belonged to him, the rule of Dahara and the woman who would be his queen. Queen. Obah puzzled at that, as he heaved her body over the back of the saddle. Queen. If she was a queen, then he would have to be a king. He supposed that would be better than Lord Rawl. King Obah Rawl. Yes, that made better sense. He worked quickly to lash her down. Before he mounted up, Obah peered down at his brother. He couldn't kill him, not yet. The voice had plans. If Obah was anything, he had always been accommodating. He would oblige the voice. He put a foot in the stirrup. The voice tickled at him. He turned back looking. He wondered. He cautiously returned to Richard's side. Carefully, Obah reached out and experimentally touched the sword. The voice murmured indulgently. A king should have a proper sword. Oba grinned. He deserved a small reward for all his hard work. He pulled the baldric off over Richard Rawl's head. He lifted the scabbard close, inspecting his gleaming new sword. The wire-wound hilt had a word woven into each side. Truth. Well, wasn't that just something? He lifted the baldric over his head and placed the scabbard at his hip. He patted his new wife's bottom before he mounted up. From the saddle, Obak grinned out at the night. He circled his horse around until the voice pointed him in the right direction. Hurry, hurry, before Lord Rawl woke. Hurry, hurry, before he could be caught. Hurry, hurry, away with his new bride. He thumped his heels to the horse's ribs, and off they charged. The hounds bounded out of the woods, a king's faithful escort. Chapter 57. Standing outside the squat buildings made of sun-dried bricks, Jensen idly surveyed the barren landscape broiling under a brutally blue sky. The rocks, the seemingly endless expanse of flat, hard pan to her right, and the rugged range of mountains plummeting into the shimmering valley in the distance to her left, were all stained with variations of the same ruddy gray color as the sparse collection of square structures huddled nearby. The bone-dry air was so hot that it reminded her of nothing so much as bending over a bonfire and trying to breathe. Blistering heat radiated from the rocks and buildings around her and rose from the ground beneath her feet as if there were a blast furnace below. Using bare hands to touch anything baking under the ruthless sun was a painful experience. Even the hilt of her knife, shaded by her body, was so warm that it felt feverish. Jensen leaned a hip warily against a low wall, nearly numb from the long and difficult journey. She patted Rusty's neck and then stroked an ear when the horse neighed gently and put her head close. At least Jensen was nearly at her journey's end. She felt as if she had lost sight of how it had all begun that day so long ago when she had found the dead soldier at the bottom of the ravine and Sebastian had happened by. What a long and tortured journey fate would deal her. She could never have guessed that day. She hardly knew herself anymore. Back then, she could never have guessed how much her life would change or how much she would change. Sebastian, pulling Pete behind, reached out and gripped her arm. You all right, Jen? Pete nudged Rusty's flanks, as if to ask the same question of the mare. Yes, Jensen said. She smiled for him and then gestured to the knot of black-robed men in the doorway of a nearby building. Any luck? He's asking the others, Sebastian sighed in annoyance. They're a strange people. Despite being part of the old world and a part of the domain of the Imperial Order, the traders who traveled the vast deserted land, sometimes using the desolate trading outpost where Sebastian had found them, were an independent lot. Apparently, there were not enough of them to worry about, so the Order didn't bother. Sebastian leaned against the wall beside her as he gazed out at the silent wasteland. He was weary, too, from the long journey back to his homeland of the old world. But at least he was well now, just as Sister Perdita had promised. The journey, though, had been nothing like what Jensen had thought it would be. She had imagined that she and Sebastian would be off on their own again, as they had been before traveling to the army of the Imperial Order. But behind them stretched a column of Imperial Order soldiers 1,000 strong. A small escort, Sebastian had called them. She had told him that she wanted to go alone, but he said that there were more important considerations. With a thumbnail, Jensen idly picked at the leather reins while watching the figures in black. The men are afraid of all the soldiers, she told Sebastian. That's why they don't want to talk to us. What makes you think so? I can just tell by the way they keep peeking out. They're trying to decide if telling us anything will somehow get them in trouble with all the soldiers. She understood the way the small band of traders felt to be under the scrutiny of so many brutish men sitting up on their big cavalry horses, how it felt to be watched by such grim soldiers layered with leather and chainmail armor and bristling with weapons. The black-robed men with their pack mules were traders, not soldiers, nor were they used to dealing with soldiers. They feared for their safety. Feared that if they said something wrong, these warriors might decide to slaughter them out here in this wasteland. At the same time, while vastly outnumbered, the traders seemed reluctant to be cowed, lest they set a precedent for how they were treated thereafter. They were debating now, trying to figure out the balance where their safety lay. Sebastian pushed away from the wall. "Maybe you're right. I'll go in and talk to them alone, in their building, instead of out here under the eyes of the army."
"I'll go with you," she said.
"What is it? What do you think?"
Sister Perdita asked Sebastian as she marched up from behind.
With a casual flip of his hand, Sebastian dismissed her concern. "I think they just want to bargain. They're traitors. That's what they do, bargain. It might be counterproductive to try to force them."
"I will go in and change their minds,"
the sister said with dark intent.
"No," Sebastian said. "Now is not the time to complicate a simple matter. We can always apply more pressure if we need to. Just let Jensen and me go in and talk to them first."
Jensen walked away from a scowling Sister Perdita, sticking close to Sebastian's side, pulling Rusty along behind. The other thing about the journey that had been unexpected, in addition to the escort of the 1,000 troops, had been that Sister Perdita had decided to come along. She said that it was necessary in case Jensen needed any more help in getting close to Lord Rawl. Jensen just wanted to plunge her knife into that murderous bastard son of Darkin Rawl and be done with it all. She had long since given up any hope of it freeing her to have her own life. After that night in the woods with Sister Perdita and the 7 other sisters, everything had changed. Jensen had made a bargain that she knew would mean she would have no life after she finally killed Richard Rawl, but at least everyone else would have their lives back. The world would at last be free of her half-brother and his evil rule. And she would have vengeance. Her mother, who had been denied even a proper burial, could at last rest in peace, knowing that her murderer had finally been visited with justice. That was all Jensen could do for her mother. Jensen and Sebastian led Rusty and Pete to where the sister's horse was waiting, in a small side paddock. Rusty and Pete welcomed the shade and the water trough. After closing the small rickety gate to the paddock, Jensen followed Sebastian into the shadow of the doorway of the squat building. The jabbering voices of the men echoing inside the single room fell silent. All the men were swathed in the traditional black robes of the nomadic traders who lived in this part of the world.
"Leave us, then," the lead man said, waving his fellows out at seeing Sebastian and Jensen enter.
The men, their eyes peering out at her from gaps in the black cloth they were pulling back up across their mouths and noses, nodded as they filed by. By their crinkled, exposed eyes, the men seemed to be smiling congenially at her from beneath the masks, but she couldn't be sure. Just in case, and considering what was at stake, she smiled back as she returned a bow of her head. The stagnant air inside the room was sweltering, but at least the shade was a relief. The one man remaining inside hadn't pulled the loose wraps of black cloth back up, so they sagged around his neck, away from his smiling, weathered, leathery face.
"Please," he said to Jensen, "come in. You look fiery."
"Fiery?" she asked.
"Hot," he said. "You are not dressed for this place."
He shuffled over to the rough plank shelves at the side and returned with one of the black bundles stored there.
"Please wear this."
He lifted it toward her several times, urging her to take it.
"It will make you better. It will cover you from the sun and hold in your sweat so you don't dry like a rock."
Jensen again bowed her head toward the small, wiry man and smiled her appreciation. "Thank you."
"Well?" Sebastian asked when the man turned away from Jensen.
Sebastian wearily pulled his pack off his back. "Any luck finding out anything from those other men?"
The black-robed figure hesitated, clearing his throat.
"Well, they say that maybe."
Sebastian impatiently rolled his eyes when he caught the man's veiled meaning, and then fished around in his pocket until he came up with a silver coin. "Please accept this gesture of my appreciation for the efforts of your men." The man took it respectfully, but it was clear the silver coin was not the price he was hoping for. He seemed hesitant, though, to say that he found the amount inadequate. Jensen couldn't believe that Sebastian was quibbling about money at a time like this. She pulled a heavy gold coin from her pocket and, without bothering to ask Sebastian if it was all right, simply flipped it to the man. The man caught the gold in midair, then opened his fist just enough for a peek of confirmation. He grinned his appreciation at her.
Sebastian shot her a look of displeasure. It was Lord Rawl's blood money, the money he had given the men sent to kill her and her mother. She could think of no better use for it.
"I don't need it," she said before he could lecture her. "Besides, aren't you the one who said it was your way to use what was close to the enemy to get back at him?"
Sebastian withheld any comment and turned to the man.
"What about it?"
"Late yesterday," the man said, finally more forthcoming, "some of our men spotted two people going down into the Pillars of Creation." He went to a small uncovered window beside shelves, stocked with simple supplies, along with more of the black outfits. He pointed.
"Down that way. There is a trail of sorts."
"Did your men talk to them?" Jensen asked, stepping forward impatiently. "Do your men know who it was?"
The man looked from her to Sebastian, hesitating, apparently not comfortable answering such direct questions from a woman, even if she had been the one who had paid his price. Sebastian gave her a look that said she should let him handle it. Jensen stepped back toward the doorway, peering out, acting disinterested so that Sebastian could get the answers they needed. Staring out at nothing, Jensen's heart hammered as she pictured in her mind stabbing Lord Rawl. The shadow of the awful price of luring her brother to this place where she was to kill him loomed over the scene in her mind of the act itself. Sebastian wiped sweat from his brow and tossed his heavy pack to the side of the floor. The pack hit with a hard clank and fell over. Some of the things spilled out. Annoyed, he made to pick it up, but Jensen intercepted him.
"I'll tend to this," she whispered, waving him back to the questioning of the small fellow in black.
Sebastian leaned against the heavy, ancient-looking plank table and folded his arms.
"So, did your men have a chance to talk to these two people?"
"No, sir."
The men were not close enough, but stood at the rim and watched the horse pass below. Jensen retrieved a cake of lye soap and replaced it in the pack. She folded the razor, closed, and replaced it, along with an extra water skin that had tumbled out. She picked up small items, a flint, strips of dried meat wrapped in cloth, and a whetstone. A tin she had never seen before had rolled out of the pack and under a low shelf.
"What did these two people on horseback look like, then?" Sebastian was asking as he tapped a finger on the table.
As she reached under the shelf, Jensen listened carefully, waiting to hear if this might be Richard Rawl. She couldn't really imagine who else it could be. She didn't believe such a thing could be coincidence.
"It was a man and a woman, but they came on only one horse."
Jensen thought that was strange, that both would be riding one horse. It sounded likely that it was what she expected, Lord Rawl and his wife, the Mother Confessor, but it was odd that they were on one horse. Something could have happened to the other horse. In this dangerous land, it wasn't hard to imagine.
"The woman, she..."
The man made a face, uncomfortable with what he had to say.
"She was not upright, but lying flat."
He gestured, as if draping something over the horse, across the back. She was tied up with rope. As Jensen pulled the tin out in a rush of surprise, the lid caught a jagged edge of the wooden shelf and popped off. The contents spilled out across the floor in front of her.
"What did the man look like?" Sebastian asked.
A short piece of wood, wound with twine and fastened down with fishing hooks, had fallen out of the top of the tin. Jensen stared down at a dark pile of dried mountain fever roses that had spilled out after the twine. They looked like dozens of little graces.
"The man was big and young. He had a very grand sword, my men say. Its shining scabbard held on with a baldric across his shoulder."
"That sounds like Richard Rawl," Sister Perdita said from the doorway, startling Jensen.
"Other men use a baldric for their sword," Sebastian said.
While she couldn't fathom a reason for him to have his wife tied across his horse, at the heady thought of Richard Rawl being spotted, Jensen hurriedly scooped up the dried mountain fever roses in her trembling fingers and stuffed them back in the tin, followed by the twine. She replaced the lid and quickly shoved the tin back into the pack along with the few remaining items that had fallen out. She checked her knife in its sheath at her belt as she hastily stood next to Sebastian, waiting to hear what else the wiry man in black might have to say. Sister Perdita had stepped outside and was wrapping herself in the protective black clothes.
"Come on," the sister called. "We have to get down there."
Jensen wanted to follow after her, but Sebastian was still questioning the man. She didn't want to leave Sebastian and go alone with Sister Bertita, but the woman was already heading off in the direction of the trail the man had pointed out. From outside, on the other side of the buildings, came the sound of the traders jabbering excitedly. Jensen peered around the side of the building and saw them pointing out across the flat, baked ground.
"What is it?"
Sebastian asked, as he followed the man out the door.
"Someone approaches," the man said.
"Who could it be?" Jensen whispered to Sebastian as he came up beside her. "I don't know. Could just be another trader arriving at the post." The wiry little man, having answered the questions, bowed and wanted to depart to be with his men where they huddled together in the shade beside another building. Sebastian made him wait as he went back in and pulled a black bundle off the shelf.
"We best catch up with Sister Perdita," he said as he watched the woman vanish over the rim of the trail down into the wavering landscape of the Pillars of Creation. "She'll protect you from Richard Rawl's magic and help you do what you need to do."
Jensen wanted to say that she didn't need Sister Perdita's protection, that Lord Rawl's magic couldn't hurt her, but it was not the time to go into the whole subject with him, to explain the whole thing to him. Somehow, it never seemed the time. It didn't really matter anyway what Sebastian believed about how she could get close to Richard Rawl. It only mattered that she did. Together, the two of them stood in the sweltering sun, watching the tiny speck racing across the endless flat landscape. In the withering heat, the distant ground undulating like the rippling surface of a faraway lake. A thin plume of dust rose behind the Lone Rider. Their escort of 1,000 men restlessly checked their weapons.
"Is it one of your men?" Sebastian asked the wiry leader of the black-robed figures.
"The ground here plays tricks with your eyes," he said. "He is still far off. The heat only makes him look closer. It will be some time before the rider reaches us and we can tell who it is."
He smiled at Jensen, gesturing encouragement.
"Put the clothing on and you will be covered from the sun."
Rather than argue, Jensen threw the gauzy cape-like garment around her shoulders. She wrapped the long scarf over and around her head, as she had seen the men doing, pulling it across her nose and mouth and then tucking the tail under the side. She was immediately surprised at how the black cloth cut the hot glare of the sun. It felt a relief, almost like standing in shade. The man's eyes smiled at seeing the look on her face.
"Good, yes?"
he asked through his own thin black mask.
"Yes," Jensen said. "Thank you for your help. But we must pay you for these things you gave us."
With a twinkle in his eye, he said, "You already have."
The man turned to Sebastian, still pulling his black scarf over his head.
"I have told you all I can, all we know. My men and I go now."
Before Sebastian could answer, the man was already hurrying across the parched ground toward the dark knot of men waiting with their dusty mules. The men started away, pulling their mules after on lead lines, eager to be away from the soldiers. They were headed south, in the opposite direction of the approaching rider.
"If it might be one of their men," Sebastian said almost to himself,
"then why are they leaving?" He looked impatiently to the small trail where Sister Perdita had disappeared and then signaled to his column of men still waiting on horseback. The grim-looking force of men advanced across the hard ground, raising a lazy fog of dust.
"We have to go down there," Sebastian said as he gestured toward the valley that held the Pillars of Creation. "Wait up here until we get back."
The officer at the head of the column folded his wrists across the horn of his saddle.
"What do you want us to do about that?" he asked.
His greasy strings of hair fell forward over his shoulder as he pointed with his chin toward the yet distant rider. Sebastian turned and watched the far-off horse galloping toward them.
"If he turns out to be suspicious for any reason at all, kill him. This is too important to risk trouble now."
The officer gave Sebastian a single nod. Jensen could see, in the hungry eyes and humorless grins of the men behind him, that they were pleased by the orders.
"Let's go," Sebastian said. "I want to catch up with Sister Perdita before she gets too far ahead of us."
"Don't worry," Jensen said. "I want Lord Rawl more than Sister Perdita does."
Chapter 58 The heat had been withering up on the barren plain, but venturing down the trail felt like descending into a blast furnace. Every breath drew the torrid air into her lungs, making Jensen feel like she were being cooked from the inside, too.
The air rising before the steep walls wavered like heat shimmering above a fire. There were places where the trail simply vanished, crossing loose rock or perhaps went under it. In other places, a depression had been worn into the soft sandstone to show the way. In some places, the track went along natural pathways, so it was largely self-evident, with little choice to make a mistake. Occasionally, they had to cross slides of scree that had buried any trace of a trail, and hope they could pick it up farther along. Jensen knew enough about trails to know that this one was ancient and unused. Although nothing could make the scorching heat any less, the black garments that the traders had given them were at least an improvement. The black cloth around her eyes cut the painful glare, absorbing the bright light, making it easier to see. It was a relief to have the dark cloth shading her face. Instead of making her hotter, as she thought, the thin cloth covering the exposed skin of her arms and neck stopped the sun from burning her and somehow seemed to keep some of the heat out. As she and Sebastian hurried to follow the trail ever downward, they soon found, to her dismay, that it led them up again over one of the fingers of ridges that extended down into the valley. The rocky ground was so rugged that it would be difficult, if not impossible, to simply go right down. So the trail cut across the ridges so it wouldn't drop so precipitously. The trade-off was that it made it necessary to descend the backside of one ridge only to have to climb the face of the next. They had no choice but to follow it, as it made a harrowing descent, then rose again. The strain on the muscles of her thighs and shins was fatiguing, but then to have to climb up again in such heat was agonizing. Jensen remembered well that Sebastian had once told her that no one ever risked going into the valley that held the pillars of creation. She could see why. By the unused nature of the trail, she knew that it was true, at least in this one place. She recalled, too, that he'd said that if anyone did go into the Central Valley, they had never returned to talk about it. She guessed that she didn't have to worry about that. As they went lower, yawning fissures and deep cuts opened in the craggy terrain, giving rise to rock walls that stood alone, as if cast off and abandoned. As they moved along the edges of vast cliffs, some of the spires made up of those splits rose up from below almost to their height at the valley rim. Looking down on such soaring towers of rock was dizzying. There were places where they were forced to make leaps across deep clefts. To see in places where they were going to have to follow the trail below was heart-stopping. Sister Perdita stood at the top of one of the prominent ridges along the trail's torturous descent, waiting for them, watching them with that silent displeasure set so enduringly in the lines of her implacable face. The growing shadows cast across the landscape added a strange new dimension to the place. The lowering sun highlighted the rugged features in a way that only helped to make clear how formidable the land truly was. Sebastian put a hand to Jensen's back and hurried her along an open, level place in the trail as they moved in among the eerie rock columns that stood like imposing dead trunks of trees that had lost their crowns and all their limbs. Ever since leaving the trader, something felt wrong to Jensen, but as Sebastian spurred her along, she couldn't bring to mind precisely what it was that was bothering her. Sister Perdita scowled as she waited. Jensen checked that her knife was still there, as she had done uncountable times before. She sometimes simply brushed her fingertips across the silver handle. This time she lifted it to make sure it was clear in its sheath, then pressed it back down until it seated with the reassuring metallic click. The first time she had seen the knife, when she had found the dead Daharan soldier, she had thought it a remarkable weapon. She still thought so. That first time seeing the ornate letter R had terrified her, with good reason, but now the touch of the engraved handle reassured her, giving her hope that she could fight back and at long last end the threat. This was the day she was finally about to accomplish what Sebastian had told her that first night. She was going to use something close to her enemy to strike back. Sebastian had been through a difficult time, too, since that first night, when he'd had to fight those men even though he had been stricken with a fever. She could never forget how brave he had been that day and how he had fought despite having a fever. Far worse than being stricken with fever, though. He had been struck down by Addie's sorcerous magic and nearly killed. Jensen was thankful that he had recovered, and that he was well, and that he would have a life, even if it was to be without her. Sebastian,
she said, suddenly realizing that she had never said her goodbye to him. She didn't want to say it in front of Sister Perdita. She halted, turning back, pulling the black scarf away from her mouth. "Sebastian, I just want to thank you for all you've done to help me." He laughed a little through the mask of black fabric.
"Jen, you sound like you're about to die."
How could she tell him that she was? "We can't know what will happen."
"Don't worry," he said cheerfully. "You'll be fine. The sisters helped you with their magic while they were healing me, and now Sister Perdita will be there with you. I'll be there too. You'll at last avenge your mother."
He didn't know what price the sisters had placed on their help and on vengeance. Jensen couldn't bear to tell him, but she had to find a way to say something. "Sebastian, if anything happens to me..."
"Jen," he said, taking hold of her arms, looking into her eyes, "don't talk like that."
He turned suddenly morose. "Jen, don't say such a thing. I couldn't stand the thought of life without you. I love you, only you. You don't know what you mean to me. How you've made my life different than I ever thought it would be, so much better than I ever thought life could be. I couldn't go on without you. I couldn't ever again endure life without you. You make the world right for me as long as I have you. I'm hopelessly, helplessly in love with you. Please don't torture me with the thought of ever being without you."
Jensen stared into his blue eyes, blue like her murdering father's eyes were said to have been, and she was unable to bring forth any words to explain, to say how she felt, to tell him that she was going to be taken from him, and he would have to face life alone. She knew how awful it was to feel alone. She simply nodded as she turned back to the trail and veiled the black scarf back across her face.
"Hurry," she said. "Sister Perdita is waiting."
The woman scowled at Jensen through her own dark mask as she stood waiting in the wind atop a broad, flat rock. Jensen could see that trail beyond the sister descended steeply among the shadows, down into the very pillars of creation. As they approached, Jensen realized that Sister Perdita wasn't frowning at her, but looking past her, staring back the way they had come. Before they reached her, up on the flat rock where her black robes lifted in the sweltering gusts, they too reached the crest and turned to see what she was watching so intently. Jensen could see from their high vantage point that in their efforts they had reached the top of a divide in the trail from where it dropped rapidly down, following the side of the ridge to take them to the bottom. But looking back across the wide gorges and rocky ridges they had already crossed, she saw that they were almost as high again as the valley rim. There, she could see the small cluster of squat buildings looking tiny in the distance. The rider was almost there, charging in on his horse, following an arrow straight route toward the trail. The company of 1,000 men had gathered in a thick line not far from the trailhead waiting for him. Dust rose in a long plume behind the galloping horse. As the lathered animal raced in at full speed before it reached the men, Jensen detected a falter in its gait. The horse's front legs abruptly crumpled. The poor beast went down, crashing to the rocky ground, dead from exhaustion. The man atop the horse smoothly stepped off the animal as it collapsed to the ground. Without seeming to lose momentum or stride, he continued to advance toward the trail. He wasn't one of the nomadic traders, but he was dressed in dark clothes, although not like theirs. He wore a billowing golden-colored cape, and he appeared to be a lot bigger than the traders. As he made straight for the trail, the commander of the cavalry cried out for the man to halt. He didn't challenge them, or seem to even say a word. He simply ignored them as he marched resolutely past the buildings on his way to the trailhead. The 1,000 men raised a shrill battle cry and charged. The poor man brandished no weapon, made no threatening move toward the soldiers. As the order cavalry raced down on him, he lifted an arm toward them, as if warning them to halt. Jensen knew, from both Sebastian's orders and from the way they charged toward the lone man, that they had no intention of stopping for anything short of his head. Jensen watched with dread as the man was about to be killed, watched spellbound as the 1,000 men crashed in toward him. The valley rim abruptly lit with a thunderous explosion. Despite the dark head wrap, Jensen shielded her eyes as she gasped in surprise. The violent rope of lightning and its terrible counterpart had twined together. A blazing white-hot bolt of lightning twisted together with a crackling black line that looked to be a void in the world itself. Terrible power joined and discharged in an explosive instant. In the space of a heartbeat, it seemed as if all the blinding brightness of the barren plain, the fierce heat of the pillars of creation, had been gathered at a single point and unleashed. In an instant, the ignition of that explosive lightning annihilated the force of 1,000 in a brilliantly lit red cloud. When the blinding light, the thunderous roar, the violent concussion were suddenly gone, so were the 1,000 men, all of them leveled. Among the smoking remains of horse and man, the lone man marched ever onward toward the trail, appearing not to have lost a step. In that man's determined movement, even more than in the way he had loosed havoc, Jensen saw the true depths of his terrible rage.
"Dear spirits," Jensen whispered, "what just happened?"
"Salvation comes only through self-sacrifice," Sister Perdita said. "Those men died in service to the Order, and thus the Creator. That is the Creator's highest calling. No need to mourn for them. They have gained salvation through loyal duty." Jensen could only stare at her.
"Who is that?"
Sebastian asked, as he watched the lone man reach the rim of the valley of the Pillars of Creation and start down without pause. "Do you have any ideas?"
"It isn't important." Sister Perdita turned back to the trail. "We have a mission."
"Then we had better hurry," Sebastian said, in a worried tone as he stared back at the distant figure advancing down the trail at a swift, measured, relentless pace. Chapter 59 Jensen and Sebastian rushed to follow after Sister Perdita, who had disappeared over the top of the ridge. As they reached the edge, they saw her already far below them. Jensen looked back in the direction of the trailhead, but didn't see the lone man. She did see, though, that a bank of dark clouds had rolled in over the expanse of barren plains.
"Hurry,"
Sister Perdita called back up to them. With Sebastian's hand at the small of her back urging her on, Jensen dashed down the steep trail. The sister moved as swiftly as the wind, the black robes flying out behind her as she raced along a trail cut into the slope of steep rock. Jensen had never worked so hard to keep up with anyone. She suspected that the woman was using magic to aid her. Whenever Jensen started to lose her footing on the loose scree and reached out for support, the rough rock rasped the skin of her fingers and the palms of her hands. The trail was as arduous as any she had ever climbed down. Loose rock atop layers of solid ledge constantly slipped and gave way underfoot, and she knew that if she grabbed the wrong handhold, the rock in many places as sharp as shattered glass would slice her hands open. Jensen was soon panting and trying to catch her breath, as well as the distant sister. Sebastian, right behind, sounded just as winded. He, too, lost his footing a number of times, and once, Jensen cried out and grabbed his arm just before he went over the edge of a precipitous drop of thousands of feet. The look in his eyes expressed the relief that he was too winded to voice. Finding herself closer to the bottom, after a seemingly unending, arduous descent, Jensen was at least relieved to note that the walls and towers were blocking the broiling sunlight. She glanced up at the sky, something she hadn't had the luxury to do for quite a while, and realized that it wasn't just the shadows cast by rock darkening the day. The sky, that only hours before had been so clear and bright blue, was now roofed with churning gray clouds, as if the entire valley of the Pillars of Creation were being sealed off from the rest of the world. She forged onward, rushing to keep up with Sister Perdita. There was no time to worry about clouds. As exhausted as Jensen was, she knew that when the time came, she would find the strength to plunge her knife into Richard Rawl. That time was almost at hand. She knew that her mother, with the good spirits, would inspire her and thus help give her the strength. She knew, too, that other strength had been promised. Rather than filling her with dread, knowing that the end of her life was so close left Jensen with an odd, numb sense of calm. It seemed almost sweet, that promise of the end of the struggle, the end of fear, the end of needing to care about anything. Soon there would be no exhaustion, no insufferable heat, no pain, no sorrow,
no anguish. At the same time, when for only an instant here or a moment there, she actually comprehended the staggering reality that she was about to die, her mind blanked out with overwhelming terror.